Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mitz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. Great news, everyone. T-Bob Hebert is now a father. So let that sink in and marinate. T-Bob Hebert has accomplished something that Mark Sanchez has not. This should make the world disappointed.
Oh, welcome to the club, buddy. I sure hope you got your sleep, because you ain't getting in for a long time.
It's going to be a little while, but the Oscar season is upon us, and he hopes to be with us before the ceremony in a couple of weeks. So, Chad, the world has been consumed by a thing called Black Panther Mania. I was at a movie theater all day on Saturday. Do you want to know what I was actually there Friday night and Saturday night. Do you happen to know what I noticed, what phenomenon I noticed?
The theater was still packed
with people. Large quantities of people at the theater.
Wait, what did you see Friday?
Game night.
Okay. How was that?
Fantastic. Fantastic, Chad. They're like John Francis Daly and Goldstein are like working their way up on the ladder. Like,
okay.
It's a pleasant surprise. It's a very good step up from Vacation, which was the last thing they actually directed. And it's a lot, the action beats are a lot better and the humor is a lot sharper, and I think they're kind of honing their craft. I mean, I don't think they should be directing a $200 million temple just yet, but that's just me.
I mean, you know, we've had people that have, you know, jumped a few rungs and it still worked out for them.
My friend Creed was a mid-budget movie. As mid-budget as you can get nowadays.
I know. What dude did Cop Car, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Like, John Watts.
Is Cop Car the equivalent of Game Night? Because I think
somewhere around there.
Yeah, because he went from that to Spider-Man, and it worked out all right.
I'm just interested to see how Jason Bateman gets a cameo in the Flash movie at this point, because, like, they're bros.
Trying to think of who he could be. One of the rogues that he could be the Pied Piper. That'll work. He can be the Pied Piper.
That'd be really interesting. So, Chad, your thoughts on Black Panther outpacing the Avengers at this point in time?
So this is what I always wanted, but I never was quite sure that it would happen. This thing is the movie that won't stop. It's as of, we're recording on Sunday, as of right now, it is projected to finish this weekend with $108 million for the weekend. I think it's just the second or third movie to go from, to have triple-digit opening week, triple-digit weekends back-to-back. I think the only other one to do it was The Force Awakens. So, we're talking like Star Wars kind of, Star Wars kind of numbers on this thing, which is crazy to think about. So, and if it's sitting at $700 million right now, which I think it is, 2 weeks in, it's like $1 billion is a foregone conclusion, and I'm happy. I think the movie deserves it. It's again, this was always my best case scenario, and here we are. My best case scenario is actually what is happening, and I'm happy for it.
Chad, do you remember a time in our lives as a collective society where we wondered openly about Wonder Woman being a 3-star match and whether or not it was going to generate good revenue? And we wondered, you know, if a Black Panther movie would reach audiences and if it would get a good response. And, you know, Ryan Coogler's a fantastic director, and you've got this amazing African-American cast, and you've got these beautiful Afrocentric designs. But is it really going to do all that well? I think we have our answer, Chad.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, you know, far exceeded everybody's expectations. Finished in the top 7 of movies in terms of box office last year.
I think so, yeah.
And really was a woman's revolution over the summer. This seems like the Black community coming together to say, we have a voice and pay attention to us.
Yeah. If this thing has like Wonder Woman legs, it's going to, $1 billion is well in sight, and it could possibly beat the Avengers entire run, which I think Avengers is
400 million?
Oh, no, no. Domestically, it's higher than that, but of the Marvel movies, The Avengers is still the number one. I think it's by like 1.5 billion. Mm-hmm. Then it's Age of Ultron is like 1.2.
It's Age of Ultron, and then it's Civil War.
Yeah, Civil War is 1.1, which at this point, I think it's going to beat that. Now it's just a matter of if it beats Avengers numbers or not.
But Chad, no one goes to see African American fronted movies in overseas. That's not a thing that happens, is it?
Yeah, that's what they used to say, and I say used to because they damn sure can't say it now. If we're sitting at 700 million worldwide, then we're about a little bit less than half of that is international. So you're still looking at 300+ for international. Yeah, all those things they were saying like that, you can't say them anymore because this movie is making money international and it still has an open in Japan and China. So that's probably like at least another 100 million. So if we just put that in the bank, we're already sitting at 2 weeks in. That all your preconceived notions are out the window.
If I'm the marketing department and I'm getting ready to market Avengers Infinity War, am I not like throwing that Wakanda footage just like out there front and center, like, hey, you know that guy that you just saw in that movie back in February? He's going to be here again, you know?
And not just him, like all the other people.
Everybody
you like
you
to
know and love.
They're all in this movie, so come on back down. We gave you like a month off. We didn't think we were giving you a month off, but it turns out y'all are going to keep going to see this. So we gave us like 4 weeks to spare between these two. Just come on right back in and feel the love from this. It's not like they have to go like scrap for footage. We know a major battle takes place in Wakanda. So, yeah, I think it would be pretty easy to put Black Panther front and center.
But why does a major battle take place in Wakanda, Chad?
We don't know yet. There is speculation, but
Mr. Coogler said he had no desire to put the Soul Stone in Wakanda.
And he said that Marvel wasn't really interested in putting an Infinity Gem in Wakanda. So, either they weren't interested in it because they already have other plans for it, or they just knew they were going to do it in this one and he could make the movie he wanted and they could still accomplish what they want. It's one of those two things.
That meteor was glowing, Chad. How many times have you seen this movie? That meteor is glowing.
I've seen it 4 times, and yes, it was glowing. And, I mean, it would explain the whole
heart-shaped herb.
Heart-shaped herb, and the whole being able to, like, commune on the soul plane. No, not the movie. Just an actual astral plane that has to deal with the human soul. So, it would make sense.
Ancestral realm is what it was called.
Yes, that's right. I should know that because my phone was still playing the Black Panther score before I got here, and that was the song that was on, so I should have known that. I don't care if it's there or not, but I'm not going to be upset if it is.
Well, I mean, what other purpose does Thanos have unless Thanos needs vibranium for some kind of reason? I don't think he's going to build his own army of Ultrons.
No. Unless they, like, whichever Infinity Gem they still have access to that's not the Vision, they decided to keep it in Wakanda, bring it to Wakanda to spread his forces out. I don't know. But, you know, we'll see. For all intents and purposes, it's March now, so it's just 2 months till we get it.
So, Chad, they thought that they were giving us a bit of reprieve. What does this say about the earning potential for Captain Marvel next March?
So, I mean, okay.
It's not going to be a cultural moment the way that this is a cultural moment.
No, it won't. But the way I always figure Marvel movies is I think the bare minimum, all Marvel movies, just by the studio slapping their name on it, they're going to get like 600 million. That's just like the bare bones. Everything over that is just, you know, word of mouth and how people feel about the characters and whatnot. And if Captain Marvel can capture some of the magic of Wonder Woman and put that on full display with the Marvel name behind it, it's not going to be Black Panther, but it can very well do like 8, 850, and I think that's a huge win. Again,
I think the key here is doing a very good movie.
Yes,
you produce a quality movie, it does not matter the month of the year, people will go and see it.
Not at all. That's kind of the window. I'm still dubious on. Well, I would say I'm dubious on January, but Kung Fu Panda 3 came out and made a buttload of money in January. So yeah, you just put something good there. But on that same token, we put Paddington 2 there. And I love that movie, and nobody wants to see it. So
not in the States.
No, not in the States. But it was, yeah, in Britain, it made all the money, and but it came out in November over there, too.
Can't wait for that guy to do a Wonka movie.
Well, we'll get to him further, later on. He is a topic of conversation.
All right, Chad. So let's move on. So, Chad, Jurassic World. It's a thing. Dinosaurs are on an island. A volcano threatens to destroy them all. Claire Danes now runs a political action committee to save dinosaurs because she was so humbled by her experience running through a park in high heels, watching her assistant get eaten and destroyed alive for reasons that were way, way, way like negligent of what her action actually was.
Wait, it's not Claire Danes. It's Opie's kid.
It's Claire.
Oh, her name in the movie? I don't know.
Yeah, it's Bryce Dallas Howard, but her name is Claire.
I do not care.
Claire and Owen.
She is. Yeah, I could not remember.
Chris Pratt's character's
nope.
name.
Nope. They're Opie's kid and Star Lord to me in this movie. That's
don't forget, Chad. Jurassic World made a butt ton of money.
Yeah, it's one of those $1 billion movies. I think it's the second highest opening. Mm-hmm. No, third.
Third now, yes.
Yeah, it's the two Star Wars movies and then that. Then Avengers. That movie is third on the list. I don't understand how. I've seen it all the way through once. I own it. I've only seen it all the way through once.
Vincent D'Onofrio wants to train raptors because if we'd had raptors, we would have gotten Osama bin Laden a whole hell of a lot quicker.
I still want to know how that's supposed to work, but okay. We'll live in his little military fantasy. So, whatever.
That movie got made, Chad. And not only did that movie got made, that movie's got a sequel coming out. And not only is that sequel coming out, but you know what else is happening? A third Jurassic World movie's coming out. Mm-hmm. In June of 2021. Just in case you were going to get scared after you saw Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom, that you weren't going to get to find out the rest of the story, as Paul Harvey would say. Do not worry. The good people at Universal Studios want to let you know you are getting Jurassic World 3.
Okay, so here's my whole thought on this. So, the Jurassic World itself is fine. It played on a whole lot of nostalgia, and it came out at a time, I think at the perfect time for the nostalgia to really hit people. So it became a phenomenon. But most people I know, when they sit and watch the movie, they're like, you know, it's fine, but it's whatever. And now, before we even get to the release of the second one, they're announcing the third one. Now, mind you, in the trailer for the second one, there is a scene where a fully grown dinosaur shows up in a little girl's bedroom. I don't know about most people. When I saw that scene, I was like, you know what? I'm out. I don't have to physically be here for this movie because it's dinosaurs and I got a kid. But I'm out. I'm just out of this movie. All right. So, when I hear that there's a release date for the third one, I think of that old ancient proverb of cart in front of horse. Because that's what this one seems like to me. I think Jurassic World 2 is going to make money. I don't know how much money. I know it's not going to make as much as this, as the first one did. I don't know if it's going to make enough to justify having another sequel. It probably, because of the first one, I guess you can say it's justified planning for the third sequel. But I mean, let's say the second one is as dumb as I think it is off that trailer. And it just bombs.
It's gonna be a hybrid, Jed. It's going to be a hybrid of Jurassic Park and of Jurassic Park and Lost World. Because remember, in the Lost World, they had the T-Rex licking the water out of the pool.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, people give Jurassic Park, Lost World, Jurassic Park a lot of crap because Spielberg kind of seems to mail it in. But the premise is not bad. Because, you know, like, you can conceivably see the investors behind Hammond going, you know what? We need to recoup our money. Like, we are on the verge of Chapter 11 bankruptcy. We've got one shot at this left because there was a Site B where we, you know, trained all the animals before we brought them over to the park. We had these plans to build a normal facility on the mainland for people who, you know, couldn't get to the island. Let's try and do this. And you could very easily see Hammond going, no, not cool, not something you need to do. And you could easily see the investors telling Hammond to go away because they need to save their own butts. And you can very easily see that going wrong.
I don't know, the premise is good because, so I read The Lost World, the book, and I love that book, even though I don't remember everything that happens now, but I remember loving the book. And I remember seeing the movie after reading the book, and I'm like, what is this? I don't like anything about this. So the premise, it took the core premise, but then it just did stuff. And
namely, Malcolm having a random daughter and Julianne Moore and Malcolm having random chemistry and Vince Vaughn magically disappearing for the whole third act.
Well, he had a daughter in the book, but she was, I liked her better in the movie. I mean, not the movie. I liked her better in the book, but she had a daughter. He had a daughter. I don't remember if Vince Vaughn's character was in the book. I think he was. I know there's another character in there that dies, like, a terrible death.
But that's the thing. Vince Vaughn's character, the videographer, like, he's on the helicopter with them going back to San Diego. From the time they get back to San Diego, it's just Goldblum and Moore. That's it for the rest of the movie. It's like Goldblum and Moore chasing down a dinosaur in San Diego.
Well, yeah. So, truth be told, I've only seen Lost World like once. Twice. Because after I saw it the first time, I'm like, I just cannot deal with this not great representation of the book that I like. So I've only seen it that one time. But yeah, when I saw the latest trailer for Fallen Kingdom, I'm like, so this is The Lost World and Jurassic Park 3 all wrapped up in one. And we clearly didn't learn any lessons from the last time. So I need to see more for me to think that this movie's going to be anything other than that. Because if it's that, I just can't see them justifying another sequel because people are going to be tapped out. Like, you got me once with Jurassic Park, the Jurassic Park nostalgia, and you did some kind of cool stuff, but that was it. I don't need to see this again.
Well, I mean, I just don't think there's enough there for them to, like, go back on. Like, okay, a lot of these same shots look like shots that have been done in previous Jurassic Park movies. And there's also the logic of the thing. Like, look, man, you still have all the genetic data to make a whole new batch of dinosaurs. So if this batch gets destroyed on the island, not a problem. You can go find another island and create whole new ones.
Yeah, I don't understand why they have to go to the island.
And then Wu, you know, getting in his helicopter, flying off with his, you know, data that he has, because he wants to continue on with his militarization of animals and profiteering, because he's still pissed at Hammond, because Hammond took all the credit for what he believed was his, and, you know, his scientific data.
So, yeah, I kind of forgot about him.
Wonder Woman, Chad.
She can be my Wonder Woman. But yeah, once you go, the whole thing with the whole thing with Jurassic Park is you can bring the, once you go to the park and the dinosaurs run free, that's kind of the story. So the first time you get us there without like the park actually opening and you see what's the worst that could happen. Now you've actually opened the park and done it, and well, I don't, that's the fun of it. I don't care about anything else. So again, retreading Lost World and Jurassic Park 3, it's just not appealing to me.
But
and
the crazy thing about Jurassic Park 3 is the basis of that movie is essentially Sam Neill ending up on the Lost World on Site B, with him not knowing how to navigate Site B. And the crazy part about that movie is the whole talking raptors, that raptors had evolved to the point where they had a communication system, where they had a fully functioning language, and they could communicate with one another in a way that it advanced from the first Jurassic Park movie, which does build on some hypotheses and theories that exist out there in the world of paleontology about what raptors might have been able to accomplish. Jurassic World takes that and amplifies it toward 1,000 and says we can win the war on terror with raptors. And
sure, buddy.
That kind of craziness. I don't know, and I don't know why Universal is backing Colin like this. And it's Colin's vision. Colin pitched it as a trilogy. It's Colin's this, Colin's that. There aren't a lot of studios lining up to give Colin money right now. And you're going to bank an entire 2 more movies off of this?
But this was... I mean, they banked... Well...
They banked to him off of Safety Not Guaranteed and Steven going, this kid's all right.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, they greenlit the second one off of him. But, you know, again, we're talking about the third one. So, yeah, I guess they're... I guess they're banking this off him too, so he's already been kind of tarnished, so you had the option. You didn't have to do this now. I mean, at least wait till the damn movie comes out before you do it.
Yeah, I would have. The timing is my question of it, because I'm just at the point where I'm like, you know, you don't, like, wait till you get the opening weekend box office numbers, then let people know there's a 3.
Exactly. I mean, I'm just not a fan of greenlighting a sequel for a movie before the first one even comes out. Or in this case, the next one really comes out. Some things can do it, like Star Wars can greenlight whatever the hell they want, because they're
Marvel
Star Wars.
Marvel can do it.
I guess at this point we have to say the Fast and the Furious can do it. But Jurassic World, again, I know it had the big weekend. I just don't know if I trust it yet.
We will see, because that's the thing that is going on.
It is, and I wish it wasn't.
I do too, Chad. I do too.
I know you hated it more than I did. I just don't care about it.
Fundamentally did not think that movie needed to exist. You know, the only purpose for that movie was nostalgia for people who love Jurassic Park. And I'm like, you know, there's a very clear answer there to do a Jurassic Park 3, or Jurassic Park 4, actually, where they all have to race back to the island to get the shaving cream can full of embryos that's been encased in mud for 20 years.
Yeah, they put that there and did nothing with it ever.
Right, and that seemed to me to be the logical way. Look, this is the last of the embryos. We get a hold of these, we can destroy it, and no one can ever make dinosaurs and make this grand, you know, Kubrick mistake ever again. And then they proceeded to do nothing with it.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, Chad, come 2021, you'll get your answers after you find out what happens in Fallen Kingdom.
Don't care.
So, Joss Whedon, beloved Marvel collaborator.
Is he?
He has made peace with them and participated in the class picture that so many people participated in, except for, you know, certain people who were at New York Comic Con. Joss Whedon got fired this week because he didn't have a story. Chad, your thoughts on DC letting go of Joss Whedon from the Batgirl movie?
So, ever since I've heard that Joss is doing a Batgirl movie,
which is likely next.
They've been amping it up, but I just had a hard time believing it just because it's Batgirl, and on the list of characters DC needs to do, she's not at the top of the list.
You might want to introduce the Barbara Gordon first.
True. But with the name recognition of Joss Whedon and the guy that did the Avengers, I'm like, okay, I see why you're doing it, DC. If he wants to do it, then yeah, you do it. But that was all before Justice League came out. And since Justice League has come out, we know that there are a lot of things going on between DC and Joss all the while. So,
otherwise known as blaming.
Yeah. Well, so when this happened, my first thought was, okay, so this is sort of fallout from Justice League, not from the reception of the box office, but a lot of people have, a lot of fans, for some reason, blame this on Joss, which I never did, because I'm like, they brought him in to save this movie that they thought was a sinking ship, and there was never going to be a chance of...
Did what he could, man. Yeah. Did what he could.
So I don't understand why you blame him. But, you know, the basically the rumors now are that, you know, Batgirl was a smokescreen so Joss could do work on Justice League. And then when the stuff with Snyder happened, came out, they were like, okay, we can just run with this and put Joss in charge of it. Basically they're saying they announced Batgirl so that Joss could have reason to be at WB and nobody suspect it had anything to do with Justice League. And then once they had a clearer reason to announce him, then they just went ahead and put him over that. And if Justice League would have hit, then yeah, he could have done Batgirl. But now since
everything's so... Jim's thought was that like it was like pretty simple. Joss asked to be brought in to fix a movie. Movie didn't get fixed. Box office results were not what was needed. Joss no longer is allowed to make that movie. My thought is different from that. My thought is Whedon is losing his feminism bona fides. All of this sexual harassment stuff starting to catch up and touch him as well. And it's a powerful female character, and the thought now, basing off of the success of Black Panther and their success of Wonder Woman, is if you're going to have minority properties, they need to be done with a minority voice behind them. And having a middle-aged white guy, even as successful at writing female leads as he is, having a middle-aged white guy writing your young female lead, not necessarily the look you want at this particular point in time.
I can get with that, too. It makes a lot of sense. If Batgirl ever was a thing, I don't think this helped. This combined with Justice League is probably enough. Like Warner Brothers,
yeah, got enough. Just can't get behind the idea that Joss Whedon didn't have a story.
It's not like
it's an overly complex character to have a story about.
No, it's not like he hasn't adapted other comics, and not like he hadn't wrote comics. He could have come up with a Batgirl story in a year. This was just their easy way out of it, and you know. If that's what they want to do, fine.
Yes, sir. So let's move on. Aquaman. We talked on the last podcast that is Lost to Prosperity that Aquaman is not getting any kind of publicity. They're not doing anything to help it. And so this week, rumors kind of circulated around that the screenings are going pretty good, test screening-wise. Your thoughts on this news casually leaking out?
So, my first thought is Warner Brothers has a record of having these test screenings and people saying spectacular things about the movies.
Hey, CEOs and executives gave Batman vs. Superman a standing ovation the first time they saw it.
Oh, I remember. My first thought is, you know, they're cooking the books a little bit on this. Yeah, it's about right that they would have a screening, but for people to just be willingly saying, oh, it's good and stuff, I just have to be skeptical of it. However, on the flip side of that, the screeners for Wonder Woman were not so kind. There were all sorts of terrible rumors about Wonder Woman coming out, and that turned out to be the best thing they had. So, you know, you've got six in one hand, a half dozen in the other. So, I want to be encouraged because it seems like they let James Wan do what Patty did and make the movie that he wanted, and with as little interference as he could. But
he has to get her in the ring, Chad.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's not like the video game, because the video game, you can just do that outside. We're watching wrestling while recording it, so.
And I'm cooking, so it's a very distracted episode.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is just, you know, whatever happens, happens.
I've already made my Mark Sanchez reference, so I'm happy.
You need to stop doing that. So, yeah, he's making the movie he wants to make. It seems like they're not interfering as much or at all. Somebody said this, I can't remember where I heard it, but they were like, you know, he made this movie over in Australia while they're dealing with all this Justice League stuff. So it's
in
just
London,
like,
yeah.
Yeah, so it's just like...
The Spider-Man thing. Feige was on set in Atlanta shepherding through Spider-Man at the time that they were shooting Black Panther. And that's why Nate got, you know, to be the lead on the press tour, because he was the producer on set.
Well, that one's easier because they still shot that one in Atlanta. Thor was the one that was just like, "Yeah, do whatever you want," because they shot that in Australia, and everything else was in Atlanta. So Taika probably had more freedom than anybody else. But again, another one shot, yeah, because they were shooting Thor.
Predictable luck.
Yeah, I'm fine with it. I like it. I think Thor ended right around the time Aquaman started. So Australia prosperity for everybody. So,
you know what movie's not shooting in Australia right now, Chad?
What movie?
Movies with blue people in them.
Oh, yeah. I forgot that was a thing. Why did you bring that up? Can I forget that we're going to have to deal with blue people, maybe? Talking about Avatar, if you don't know. But I want to be encouraged by this, but I have to say we got to take it with a grain of salt, because DC has a record of this.
They do. They do have a record of this. I just find it interesting, the timing-wise. It's just a weird place in the news cycle to get that information out there and not, like, be highly publicly about it, but, like, Batman on film type on the down low about it.
Yeah.
Where only nerds are going to hear it. I just think that's an interesting time.
I mean, at this point, this is about the time you want nerds to hear this kind of stuff. The rest of the general population can wait, because if they hear it now, they're going to forget about it.
Comic-Con is my target to ramp up things there. I mean, it's July. You're 5 months out from the release. You're going to have a big panel anyway. That's pretty much the only thing you have a big panel for, you know.
Well, I mean, so if you were me, yeah. You focus the panel around Aquaman. It's the only thing you... Well, focus around Aquaman and Shazam, because those are the only two things you have filming or in post-production right now, and probably the only things you will have at the time of Comic-Con. But I would also at that point clearly lay out, okay, we're done with all the stupid crap, this is what's happening from now on. And you give, we already got a Wonder Woman release date, you update the release date of The Flash, and finally revealed that it is not going to be Flashpoint, it's just going to be The Flash.
Going back on your hyping promise from a year before.
Yeah, well, that's because we were dumb a year before. You announce when the hell Matt Reeves, the Batman, is coming out, and make sure everybody understands it's still in the same universe, but Matt Reeves can do whatever the hell he wants otherwise. And you give him a goddamn Superman movie. That's what you do. You don't need to put anything else out there. We're doing all these things. We have dates for all these things. And boom, that's it.
So, Chad, not a PowerPoint presentation with a bunch of titles that flash by really quickly with no release dates?
No.
Where's the fun in that? That leaves fanboys no speculation room.
No, that's... I'm hesitant to even say this because the last year, Warner Brothers has come out like, we're doing these movies. And the next year they come out like, no, we're doing these movies now. And then they come back again. But forget that we're doing these now. So we will be playing this game again. But this time you would have to actually like, no. For real, guys. This is what we're doing. This is it right here.
Go back to what I said the last time. Marvel put out their slate. They called up the media, said be at the theater for 10 a.m. on a random Tuesday. Dropped their slate. Everybody was pretty confident they were going to get the old slate. A month before that, DC Warner Brothers puts out their slate on a conference call, and everybody's like, I'm not sure we're going to see half of this. They were right. So speaking of commitments that are on the books, there's a Nightwing movie that's on the books. However, said Nightwing director got offered a job making a nerdy movie called Dungeons & Dragons, and he accepted said position, which sent the internet in a tizzy, wondering in the conundrum of what this meant for the Nightwing movie that has been in development for over a year. Because it was announced right about the time of Lego Batman movie last February. That said director brought out a tweet, said, I'm pretty sure Warner Brothers are going to have to fire me if they want me to leave Nightwing. Your thoughts on what that means for the future of Chris McKay on the Nightwing movie?
So I think Chris McKay really, really wants to make Nightwing. I think he really, really, really wants to have that happen. I also think Chris McKay wants to work, and he knows that Nightwing is a ways off. So that's why the implications of taking this job would imply that the Nightwing movie is probably, best case scenario, is like 3 years from ever happening. Because if he's going to make Dungeons and Dragons, and this is the next project, and let's say he starts that this year, he'll shoot it this year. The earliest it can come out is the end of next year, but it's probably not going to come out until 2020. So if you're looking at that, he won't be able to start a Nightwing movie until 2 years from now, which means that's another year away. So we're looking at 2021 before we get the Nightwing movie. And that's just being completely optimistic. However, I don't think that's the timeline. I think Nightwing will be further down, like 4 or 5 years down the road. So he took a job. He still wants to do it. But I'm not sure how locked in Nightwing is, because I think around the time this happened, he said he was going in with his Rip-O-Matic. He was working on his Rip-O-Matic for Nightwing. And what a Rip-O-Matic is when a director's pitching a movie, they cut a bunch of scenes from other movies to get like a look and a feel for the movie they want to make. And they bring it to the studios and like, this is what I want to do. So it's like a pitch. So if he's working on that right now, well then this might not be as locked in as we thought. So yeah, it just tells me Nightwing is a ways away. I really think he wants to do it, but it's not happening anytime soon.
And that's probably a good thing for the DC Cinematic Universe at this point in time.
Yeah, I think a Nightwing movie is better served to come out after we've had a Batman movie.
Or a Nightwing movie as part of the one-shot DC Universe.
I'm still
juggling knives that are on fire.
Yeah. You've already proven you can't walk and chew bubblegum, but you want to graduate to flame-throwing spears and juggling at the same time. Yeah, that's not the way this is supposed to work. So,
representation, Chad.
They're doing the... So, yeah, if you're waiting for Nightwing, I think it's better served after a Batman movie, which hopefully establishes a Robin, and that Robin is not Dick Grayson, but he was the Robin, and then you can go from there.
Should be interesting.
Hopefully.
So, Chad, Mission Impossible. Those movies just keep getting better. They keep making more money. Franchise has been active since 1996. Still going.
22 years.
You know what they just did? They just finished filming. Your thoughts on the fact that Fallout, the new Mission Impossible movie, is coming to a cinema near you with a Henry Cavill mustache and and just having Rap Billing.
So anytime I think about this movie, and this is the curse of Justice League, anytime I think about this movie, I automatically think about Henry Cavill's mustache because he could not shave it because of this movie. And then we just got the trailer, like, what, last week? Mm-hmm. And then this week...
you can see a man break his leg.
Yes, if you freeze frame right at the right spot when Tom Cruise jumps across that building and lands... on that ledge, if you freeze frame right at the right spot, you can see where his foot breaks. Like, even if full time, real time, you can see where his foot breaks. But so I thought, I knew that they had to hold off because he broke his foot, but I thought they came back, and I think that I thought they were close to finishing when that happened and they had to push it back some, but that they got all it was already done. I thought this movie was done because he broke his foot in like August. But yeah, here it is. We already got a trailer, and a week later, like, hey, we're finally finished principal photography. Like, say what? What do you mean you just finished principal photography?
For a movie that's out in July.
It's out in July, and you've been shooting since last year, like, around this time. It's when it started. Because it... Justice League...
Reshoots.
The reshoots happened over the summer. And he couldn't shave his mustache. When the reshoots happened, it was right around the time I thought Mission Impossible was ending. So Mission Impossible started shooting like March at the latest.
Of 17.
And here we are, a week away from March being here, and this movie is just done. It does make sense now that I've seen him, every time I see Henry Cavill, I'm like, why do you still have that stupid mustache on your face? But apparently it's because he was still shooting this stupid movie for a whole goddamn year.
And here's hoping that McQuarrie and crew can pull off another outstanding installment in the Mission Impossible franchise.
Oh, I haven't seen the last two, but I have no doubts that they're going to make a good movie. It's just the fact that it's kind of ridiculous that it's been a year. I'm just shocked.
These things happen when your star breaks his leg.
Yeah, but that happened in August.
And he also, flies his own helicopters and does all his own stuff.
Which is why you can do some of those scenes is sitting down. Like, I thought they were going to do all the scenes but didn't require him moving a lot after a couple weeks and then finish the heavy lifting later on.
I mean, that's how Harrison Ford got by.
Yeah, I thought that's exactly what we're getting. I thought this movie would have been done, like, November, if they had to wait. But I really thought the filming was almost done when he broke his leg, so it wasn't going to be that bad. But apparently I was wrong.
So Chad, there's a Paddington 2 that is the two Paddington movies. They're really, really fantastic. Really great children's cinema.
Love them both.
That guy's getting some recognition now. Some brand name love, because he's actually a very good director. He's been in talks for a lot of different projects, but recently, the all-powerful House of Mouse has asked him to join their Pinocchio remake, their live-action Pinocchio installment. Chad, Pinocchio is a very creepy movie as an animated form. It's only going to be more creepy in live-action form. And the only Pinocchio story I actually enjoy is the storyline with Pinocchio from Once Upon a Time Season 2. Why do we need to put Disney's live-action Pinocchio movie ahead of doing justice to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory after the besmirching that it was given by Tim Burton?
Well, to answer that question, I'm pretty sure Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is Warner Brothers, right?
Yes.
Okay, and you just said Disney. Disney rules the world. Whatever they want, they get. If they want him to make Pinocchio first, well, damn it, that's what's going to happen. Now, to the whole prospects of a Pinocchio movie in the first place, you are right, Pinocchio, again, being that I have a kid, I have watched Pinocchio, the cartoon, recently, and it is creepy. I'm always going to say it's only kind of creepy because I started to read the actual story of Pinocchio. And in the first chapter, it ends with him taking a mallet and killing the cricket. So, and it only gets worse from there. So, Pinocchio itself is this creepy story, and this
as little all folk tales are.
Yeah, this little wooden puppet is a little asshole, and bad things happen to him, and they are justified. Again, the cricket that you know from the cartoon, he dies by the end of the first chapter. The little sucker comes to life. He mouths off to Geppetto. He runs away. The cricket's like, "Don't do that." He's like, "Shut up." He takes a mallet, throws it at the cricket. Cricket's dead. That starts Pinocchio. So the Disney version is not quite that, but it is kind of creepy. And so you're going to have to bring this little computer-generated puppet to life. And you're going to have to make him kind of endearing to cut the creep factor. So I get why they're going after this guy, because Paddington, the bear itself in the movie, is so goddamn charming that you can't help but love him. And once you love him, you love the movie.
Even though they had a lot of like creative issues there, because they had to switch from Colin Firth to the other guy midstream.
Yeah, and credit to Colin Firth, because Colin Firth was like, he was really big on trying to get Paddington done, and they were already like halfway done. He might have been halfway done with his stuff. He was like, "You know what? This isn't working. You need to get somebody else." And they got
Paddington does not have my voice.
Yeah, and they went and got I think it's Ben Whishaw. He's the new Q
from the Bond movies.
Yeah, and he works out so well. I love that goddamn bear. I almost want to go watch it again right now because we're talking about it. So if he can bring that level of charm to Pinocchio, I get why they're going to get him.
It's very interesting, Chad.
No, I don't think they should make this movie, but if they're going to do it, might as well go get him.
But I don't want him to have the job, Chad. We need a good musical version of Willy Wonka again. We need somebody to replace Gene Wilder now that Gene Wilder has gone on to the great beyond. Like, we need someone who will redeem us from the sin that is Johnny Depp's portrayal in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
So, this is one of those movies that I kind of avoided. So I only think of Gene Wilder when I hear it. So I'm not as like...
You are not tainted by the sin.
I mean,
some of us are tainted by the sin, and it cannot be unseen.
Oh, I've seen it.
It takes our childhood and it puts it in a giant vat of chocolate, then freezes it, then hits it over the head with a mallet and breaks it into 1,000 pieces.
See, I've seen the movie, but I've seen it less than
someone three at times. Warner Brothers decided it was a good idea to give the guy who made Edward Scissorhands and Sleepy Hollow a chance to make a children's movie that is a remake of a movie from the 70s, which is based on a book that the author hated the 70s musical version of because he said it wasn't light, it was too light.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure he would love the Warner Brothers one. But we're talking about Warner Brothers, and you know they make questionable decisions. Two, the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory is kind of creepy. So when you think of creepy in a kind of
Wilder's never creepy in a pedophile kind of way.
No, not the movie. The book. The book
is a commentary on life in 1800s England, where like you were desperate to get out of the impoverished situation that you were in, and you were desperate enough as a child to believe in a dream that would allow you to have hope.
Yeah, all of that is great, but the stuff that happens in there is still kind of creepy. Because there's still...
Oompa Loompas are very creepy in the book.
Oompa Loompas are very creepy, and they give you a whole lot of like their backstory, which the movie gave some to.
On the planet, and saves them from being slaves, and eaten...
Yeah, eaten by... There's something that eats them, and yeah... So when you think of creepy, you think of
which the Burton version gives a visual to.
Yeah, and that's why you get it, because it's like it's Tim Burton. He makes creepy, but it's not necessarily creepy that will offend a whole bunch of people. It's just weird because Tim Burton's weird. But that's how you end up with that movie. So it seemed good to somebody at the time. So I understand you want a palate cleanser, but Disney swings a big stick. And it's bigger than Warner Brothers. And if they want him, they will just bop Warner Brothers on the head and says, no, wait. And he's going to go to Disney.
But you know where Warner Brothers has not made bad decisions, Chad?
Where?
It.
Ah, yeah.
That. They have not made bad decisions with it. And they are in talks to bring the casting that everybody wants to see. The one part of casting people have been begging for since It was financially successful. We had known for a lot of years that they had broken the movie into two parts. We knew that they were going to do the Young Losers Club and the Adult Losers Club. And we all knew who we wanted to be adult Beverly Marsh if we got an It Chapter 2. We all knew that we wanted it to be the most amazing, charismatic thespian that we have in cinema today. We wanted it to be Jessica Chastain. And you know what Warner Brothers has done? You know what the producers of It have done? They've entered into talks with Jessica Chastain.
Yep.
For the adult Beverly Marsh in It Chapter 2. Your thoughts, Chad?
This just seemed like the no-brainer of no-brainers. This is the equivalent of me of Fox going to get Patrick Stewart to be Professor X, because he had to be Professor X. Since much like everyone has said that she needed to be
Beverly.
Yeah. So good on Warner Brothers for like trying to do something right. It helps that she said she wants to do it. She knows the director. They have a relationship. So, yeah, it seemed like the most logical thing, but oftentimes the most logical thing doesn't always happen.
In this case, I'm glad it is.
Yeah.
So, Chad, you tried to poke the bear this weekend on Twitter.
Who's the bear?
My love of the Dark Tower is the bear. And you chose to poke the bear.
I didn't choose to poke the bear. It was there. I just showed you.
News broke this week that, for some reason, Amazon TV, who is also, you know, paid a boatload of money to have the television rights to all Tolkien's material, is in talks to bring that Dark Tower television series to life. Can I tell you why this is a bad idea?
Yeah.
Because if you decide to bring back Elba and McConaughey and tie it to the movie, we're never getting another Dark Tower movie. If you want to start over at book one and go from book one to book 19 or book 12, with the TV series, that might actually be the way to go. Especially in this prestige TV climate, doesn't seem like they're itching to do that. They're itching to kind of blend things together again in another amalgamation, because you know, it worked out so well the first time. And also, we've got King out there saying that the only reason it didn't work was because it wasn't R-rated. So, yeah, the Dark Tower franchise continues to burn to the ground while It is alive and well.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. You know a whole lot more about this than I do. I just thought it was interesting that they're still going to make this goddamn show. And I was just showing it to you, because I figured you'd see it anyway.
You showed it to me, and then I showed you the what the list happening to the legacy of the Dark Tower.
Raging Inferno.
So, speaking of Raging Infernos, is The Rock still doing his interpretation of the Raging Inferno?
Which interpretation is that?
Wasn't he supposed to be in a movie where the building is on fire and he has to escape?
What, Skyscraper?
Yes, yes.
Oh, yeah, that's the one that got that stupid poster where you can tell clearly he's not making the jump. I guess they had a trailer around the Super Bowl. I didn't watch it.
Oh, yes, that's right. This the trailer where he's doing his best John McClane.
Yeah, with one leg. Yeah. I forgot that it was a thing. I still have not seen...
So it's less Tower of Inferno, which is an interesting movie unto itself, and more Die Hard remake.
Yeah, from what I've heard, yes.
From what I've seen, yes. So, I went and saw four of the Best Picture nominees this weekend.
Which four?
We saw The Phantom Thread. We saw Lady Bird. We saw Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri. And we saw Shape of Water. Ah. Crowd of 75 people. It's very nice. Yeah. 30-minute breaks in between. Very nice. Highway robbery for the prices on concession.
Oh, yes.
Always nice. Phantom Thread is amazing visually. This is my second time seeing most of these. Everything except Call Me By Your Name is my second time through. Sound design for Phantom Thread was amazing and needs to be recognized because it truly aids the movie, and the score is fantastic for Phantom Thread. Lady Bird is hands down my favorite movie of the year. It made me happy and filled me with love, joy, and peace, and it made me all in my feels about like early high school and like the war in Iraq and like circa 2003, 2004 songs, and I need to own the soundtrack, and you know, and Ronan is one of the best young actors working today, and I can't wait to see what she does next. If you haven't seen Brooklyn, go out and see Brooklyn. She has been awesome in everything she's been in. I'm disappointed they're doing a Hannah TV series because I think that you know, that you could do another one of those with her and it would be interesting. With Three Billboards, Sam Rockwell's performance is so everybody's talking about McDonough as director, and they're talking about McDowell for her role in the movie, right? Tour de force, powerhouse performance, grieving mother, yada yada. Sam Rockwell's performance is way better because he goes from basically autistic racist who does really bad, really despicable things but can't control it because, you know, he's not all there, to invaluable to the plot and to invaluable to bringing resolution. And the movie's ending starts a conversation, which is something I love about that movie. It takes unexpected turns. I really don't think that, in my mind, that Alan deserves a nomination for Best Supporting because he's not there for half the movie. He's only there for half the movie in voiceover, which the words are powerful by when they're being read by him, but that's not really like the evocative performance that makes me think, you know, Best Supporting Actor. And I like the message of the movie because the message of the movie is essentially hate begets hate, and that hate and rage and revenge don't accomplish anything, something that we learn in Black Panther, that, you know, once it consumes you, it consumes you, and you can hate. But if you can learn to love and accept love into your heart and find forgiveness of others, then you can find a balanced life that will bring you the peace that you are so angry at that has been taken from you. And so the movie has a lot of powerful things to say in the era of Trump, in the era of anti-activism, in the era of just relentless, forceful anger. So that movie's really good. I do think that if it wins, it will be compared to Crash, because I don't think in 5 years we're going to be talking about it. Shape of Water is fantastic. It's Del Toro at his best. The costume, the hair and makeup, how the hair and makeup didn't get out of the hair and makeup branch for a nomination for the Oscars is beyond me. The movie completely rides on its set design, on its feel, evocative feel of the 1950s. If the creature design doesn't work and the monster doesn't work, the movie doesn't work. So I don't see how you don't nominate the makeup and design team. Sally Hawkins gives a powerhouse performance. I think Sally Hawkins' performance is more key to Shape of Water working than McDowell's performance is to making Three Billboards work. I really like her performance. I really think she did a powerful job with it. Del Toro's camera movements, his odes to cinema of the past, his tone, his the sound, the score, it's a really fantastically, beautifully made story that moves. That's the thing that I don't like about Phantom Thread. Phantom Thread feels long, especially in the second half, where you're just like, when are we going to get there? And what is the point of, what are you trying to tell me, Paul? Like, what are you trying to say with this film? Which is, what he's trying to say with the film is essentially, you know, guys can have daddy issues, and it can mommy issues, and it can really mess with their maternal understanding. It can really mess with the way that they interact with women, and it can really mess with their sense of priority, and it can really mess with their sense of respect. You know, but it takes too long to get there. So I really think Shape of Water was better than Three Billboards, but I still think Lady Bird's better than both. I know Lady Bird won't win, but I know it'll probably finish third on the ballot, which will make me happy. And I can't wait to see what Greta does next. Because I haven't been this excited about a young filmmaker since Dakota, the Dakota Diable, the lady who wrote Juno. Who's also, I think, gone on to do Young Adult and Tully, which is the new Charlize Theron movie, which kind of feels like a spiritual sequel to Young Adult. But of those movies, like that's my takeaway from those four, and we'll get the other five next week.
Yay. You know, so the Oscars are next week.
Yes, next Sunday. A week from today.
Yeah. Yeah, I won't see any of those movies before then. Probably not.
I mean, I just... Like, those are your three. Universally, those are your three. And your acting categories are basically locked up at this point. Allison Janney is your best supporting actress. Your best lead actress.
I thought she was supporting.
Yeah, she's supporting. Everybody is assuming that it's Gary Oldman for Best Picture, Best Actor. Everybody's assuming it's Del Toro for Best Director at this point. Best Picture still a toss-up at this point, down to two movies, Three Billboards and Shape of Water, but Three Billboards won the last major milestone along the way, so the thought is maybe they're leaning more toward Three Billboards. But you never know after last year's, you know, debacle.
Yeah.
You know, it looks to be kind of a paint by numbers thing with not a lot of differences or surprises along the way. It's kind of like the card to WrestleMania. Like, we know where we're going, we just don't know how we're going to get there exactly.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm watching the show. I don't know. I won't have much to say about it. I might watch.
Well, you know what happens on our next episode, Chad. I go by the ballot.
Yeah.
Category by category.
And then I'm going to wing it for the movies. I might watch Three Billboards because I know it's on. I think you can stream it now. But that's if I see anyone, it's probably going to be that one.
Three Billboards is... describing Three Billboards as a dark comedy is apt. But the film has so much to say about the current moment and the anger that exists in the world and the idea of anger... anger politics getting you to where you need to go. It's got a lot to say, but it takes you unexpected places. Three Billboards in Shape of Water and Lady Bird all take you on an emotional journey. It's just three different kinds of emotional journeys.
Okay.
And in Shape of Water, your boy Michael Shannon just relishes being a badass.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. That's part of the that's one of the reasons I want to see it. I mean, there's a lot of reasons, but I like Michael Shannon.
Indeed. So that's what you can expect on next week's episode. Some more movie news and my Oscar predictions as I once again fail miserably at predicting the Academy Awards. So that'll about do it for this week's episode. If you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At The Mets Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.